You are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I am your host, Tyus France. Sitting across from me is Alex. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me back.
We are the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. If you haven't been to our website and checked it out, it's lpnevada.org. We would love for you to go there, check out all the social events that we've got going on. Basically, it's a great place to learn a lot about our party and what we're doing as a party to try to impact Nevada. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about some things outside of Nevada, not only outside of Nevada, but outside of the country. And we're going to talk a little bit about Catalonia, which was a very rich part of Spain, and they have recently declared independence from Spain. So as I understand this went down, how this went down was that in Spain, this I don't know if it's a city or a province or intelligence right there that I just don't know. But this area of Spain basically said, you know what, we want our independence. They've talked about it for a long time. They were setting up voting booths, and then all of a sudden, the national government came in and said, nope, we're not good with you doing that. So anti-protesters in the form of, the Spain brought in armed forces, and then there was protesters, and then fire departments joined hands and basically created a wall between them, saying, no, don't cross this line. And what ended up happening was the firefighters were beaten by the national government, and so were many of the protesters. And that local area of Catalonia had to set up voting booths that they were bolting down into concrete because they were trying to steal them away so that the vote couldn't happen. They were interfering with that democratic process of them voting. Ultimately, they have officially declared their independence. However, Spain is saying that that doesn't matter, that your official independence can't be declared. It is null and void, and it doesn't matter, and we're willing to use force. So right now, we've got a very interesting incendiary situation where, on one hand, I'm very, very excited for Catalonia. I think one of the best things that we've ever come up with as a society is free markets. And if you want a better government, there's no better way to create a better government than to make competing governments. When one government competes with another, people have the option to go from one place to the other, and they're going to go, I'm going to go to the best place on the planet, which was really what we were talking about with the American dream, right? People came to the U.S. because of what we offered that was different than other countries. Well, so on one hand, I love this idea. On the other hand, I am deeply afraid for this small area because they have a potential national force coming against them that may be very, very violent and very, very aggressive. So we're watching this unfold. We've talked about this happening in the United States. Texas has talked about this. California has talked about this. Has Washington? I think Washington mentioned something about becoming their own independent sovereign country, I think. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, a lot of the places that were unhappy with Trump's election, I imagine.
Yeah. And then the terrifying idea of, if it were to happen here, would it happen like it's happening in Spain? Would the government take that massive army and say, sorry, you're not allowed?
Oh, yes, they would. Absolutely. We've already got, we're already one for one.
One for one?
Civil war.
But that was more about people's freedom as opposed to becoming their own country, right?
Well, but no, that's true that that was the rationale for declaring war on the Confederate States. But, I mean, one of the more pressing economic reasons was that the South generated more money and more tax revenue. They didn't want to see all of that sail away. And I have to believe that there was at least some strong motive to not just keep the country together, but, you know, because they wanted to... they wanted access to all of the tax money that they could generate by having the South as part of their thing. But the South, in a way, they voted to leave the United States.
And we my history, apparently.
I mean, through their state legislatures, voted to leave the Union and join the Confederacy. that was what went down, right? Each state legislature had the opportunity to do this, and they left. So I'd have to believe that, yeah, if any state did that, I believe that the United States military would declare martial law on the state, force a new election of state legislature, you know, and if they wanted to continuously vote, they might even strip them of statehood and turn them back into a territory.
You know, the irony of that is insane, considering the way our country was founded was from breaking free of a tyrannical government.
Yeah, the history books treat Lincoln really well, but there were some, I mean, again, there's a flip side, right? Yeah. I mean, the idea is that it wasn't the South fighting itself. It was the North fighting the South. It wasn't people rising up from the streets, you know, the way they've done in, totally blanking on it, but
Catalonia?
Not in Catalonia. Well, that also, but
Venezuela.
Middle East is what I was going for. Venezuela is on the brink, though. No, against Gaddafi. God.
What's happening to me?
Oh, man, I must be tired. But at any event...
we all know what we're talking about.
Yes.
If you're listening, you know what we're saying.
Yes. you know, the answer to today's quiz is... gosh, that's so embarrassing.
Oh, well.
Happens. But in any event, yeah, I would argue that that is a civil war of a group of people fighting against its own government versus our civil war was more us fighting against another group of people's government that they had formed sort of in exile of, you know, the United States. They voted to leave the United States. They did leave the United States. They formed their own national government that was a competitor to the United States of America. And the United States of America declared war on that competitor.
Hmm. You know, this is only really possible in a state that has tremendous financial resources, which is why California and Texas are kind of the ideal situations for that.
Well, they're in such debt, California. They need federal money. Without that, California... In fact, California is already doomed, all right? They have a higher income tax than you could possibly... They have a higher sales tax. They have a 10, 11, 15% income tax. They've got all the federal taxes. And they're still billions of dollars in deficits. Illinois is right behind them.
But they bring in so much money. Do you know what I'm saying? So like, if you were to cut out the federal side of those taxes...
They would be in massive amounts.
You still would
be on. They get block granted billions of dollars. Probably trillions, actually, because of how huge they are.
Huh.
So they get, well, maybe not a trillion, but they get hundreds of billions of dollars is block granted by the federal government through income taxes to California. And it's collected, that 30, 35% on all those rich people that live in California, that's all collected by the federal government and block granted by Congress back to the state government.
Wow. You know, I can't wait for them to fall into the ocean, so I've got oceanfront property. keep waiting.
Everyone in Pahrump, you know, right? They're just waiting.
Right on the fault line?
Yeah.
So anyways, keep an eye out on Catalonia. Now, back in the States, we've got ridiculous things taking place. So specifically, Eminem did a song about Donald Trump. It wasn't even like a song. It was like fake improv rap. And people got really, really mad. And they got mad on both sides. So on one side... I had heard people saying, well, okay, now you have to ban Eminem. Nobody should listen to Eminem anymore because he hates the government. Okay, I'm fine with that. Then I heard people saying, hey, just because you don't agree with what he says doesn't mean you shouldn't like Eminem. Which to me, that's when the argument went like, wait, that's insane. Like if I don't like Walmart's products, I'm not going to buy Walmart's products. Even if I liked them in the past, if they changed it, I'm not going to like it anymore. So if you haven't seen this video, go check it out. I don't know if you have any comments on it particularly.
No, I'm not a big rap music fan. I like my music to have no words, you know. Or if they are, they're like, you know, alleluia. You know,
sure. Well, for what it's worth, they beeped out half of the video. There was,
oh, really?
Yeah, everything was censored because it was on national television or something like that.
You know, I think that the foundation of a lot of modern music is anti-government, though. And so I don't think that this is... I can't imagine rap music and hip hop has constantly been anti-police, anti-oppression. It really derives from that set of sentiments. I mean, think about all of our favorite rap artists from the 90s. I mean, they're rapping about...
Fuck the police.
That's literally a song, I mean, or a rap, if you will, yeah. Right? So,
Ice Cube,
right? I can't imagine why anybody would not expect that someone would rap about, you know, fuck Trump. I mean...
You know what's also strange?
Isn't that obvious? That's what they're always saying, fuck whoever, right?
And they're censoring certain words. They're like, these words are dangerous, but the idea is...
George Carlin's rolling in his grave.
Yeah, the ideas apparently aren't dangerous, right? So the government's like, oh, no, you can't say four letters put together. Like, that series of sounds...
So bleep Trump.
...hurts. Yeah.
We're all going to bleep Trump.
But isn't it just a couple more steps for them to say, well, you know what, if we're able to censor this, and now we say the entire idea is what's really harmful, maybe they just start censoring ideas across the board.
You know, and that's what the argument that George Carlin made, and the FCC won, of course. But, you know, the seven dirty little words you couldn't say on television is a much more important landmark case than people should really look into, because... It took someone who was a very famous comedian to create a lawsuit against the federal government for these rules about what you could and couldn't say on television. Because again, I know we've had people talk to me about, hey, maybe you could self-censor you guys' language on here. But that's how it begins, right? Our society starts to decide which words are okay and not okay, not how you use them or who you direct them to. Just which words are and aren't okay, that's the beginning of groupthink, of collectivism, and all of those things end with the same socialist paradise. And if you don't believe that socialist paradise is gorgeous, I would invite you to drive through East Berlin and just look at the difference, even 25 years later, between East and West Berlin. That'll clear up right for you whether or not you think socialist paradise is as good as capitalist paradise.
I think episode one, we actually said, like, we're going to hold to freedom being a fundamental tenet of this. Mm-hmm. And because of that, language is open, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't like the language, you don't have to listen to it. And that's, there you get the free association. Now, with that being said, we are marked in iTunes with an explicit tag, because iTunes says, if you want us to distribute your podcast, we want you to abide by our rules. So we do that. Now, this is all happening privately.
Yeah.
This is all private, free trade. So censorship can still take place. You can still find a marketplace where, you know what, I want things that are safe for my children. And if you, like, Netflix offers that. Netflix will censor TV shows that are available. There are free market solutions where you don't need a government to come in and have to censor everything that is said.
Even the Motion Picture Association of America is a private organization that does the rating and this sort of thing. And so, I mean, the fact is that, yes, the government makes laws that, you know, are based on those ratings, but at the same time, you know, it's just a guideline. It's there so that we can talk about you know, the idea that maybe I don't want my kids to be exposed to certain sexual themes at, you know, 12,
yep,
right? Maybe I want them to wait till they're 17 or 18 to see some of that stuff. You know, I think that's a totally fair thing. But what's crazy, you know, and a lot of friends from overseas have pointed out, and I don't know if you've got some friends from overseas that would agree with this, but the idea that we're very cautious about language, right? We're very sensory of curses and, you know, cuss words and stuff, but we'll show people getting blown up.
It's crazy.
We'll have rapes. There's certain things that you'd be like, oh, that's got to be an R-rated movie. And it's like, well, it's not, because it didn't say fuck.
Yep.
Isn't that crazy?
What's weird to me on that specific thing is what is okay socially and what is not okay? Because porn is frowned upon, and yet we wouldn't be here if they didn't have sex. If sex was not something that is had on a regular basis, we don't exist. And it's not a hateful act. It's almost always a voluntary thing.
Yeah.
And yet, blowing somebody's head off, that's really common. Like, really common in movies. And I understand they're trying to create something that's provocative, but we say, well, sex is too provocative.
Yeah.
It's very, very strange to me.
Isn't that weird, though? Because, I mean, it's funny, because other cultures will point out to us, like, you guys are obsessed with blowing things and blowing people up.
They're right.
but yet, you know, when one of us has a topless woman, which is very common in most of the, well, I wouldn't say most of the world, but Europe is very common because breasts aren't considered a sexual item in the way that they are in America. in America, people get mad at women nursing. And I'm, you know, it's kind of funny because I always like to turn to those people and go, you know, that's what they were designed to do, right? You know, you realize that they're udders, okay? I mean, if she can't use them to breastfeed, what can she use them to do?
So last night I was at this party. I was at a Halloween party. And this guy has this amazing, huge house, invites a bunch of people there. And there's this hot tub that seats 24 people. It's an enormous hot tub. And in it, some people go, a few tops come off, fine, right? And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to some friends about this. And we're just like, you know what makes that so amazing? You know why I'm sitting here staring at boobs? Is because there's scarcity to them. Like, I wouldn't even be interested. It wouldn't even be novel if every single person was walking around naked. But the fact that there's scarcity, I'm suddenly like, ooh, that's cool. And I wonder how many things would be beautiful in this world if you added a little scarcity. Like, if people had to drive to one state in the country in order to see the sky, suddenly people would realize how beautiful that sky is all the time. But we just have it handed to us. And we're like, normal.
You know, but what's cool is, you know, people do drive to the middle of Arizona and Nevada to see the night sky because there's nowhere better to see it. Mm-hmm. So I would say that, you know, light pollution creates a scarcity in the night sky nowadays.
Or the eclipse. The eclipse had scarcity. It was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen.
You went to the eclipse, didn't you?
It was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. And I wonder, maybe it was made more amazing by the fact that it was so rare.
Because you knew you couldn't see it again for at least a year or two.
Yeah.
And that's if you wanted to go to another country.
Yeah, if I was willing to fly somewhere else and get to the right place, and maybe there'd be cloud coverage, right?
Right.
So scarcity... Every episode, I'm going to talk about how economics is the fundamental thing of all of this stuff. So go out and read a book.
Yes, Road to Serfdom by Friedrich Hayek.
All right, let's keep going. What else were we talking about? So online, I think I started this. I'm pretty sure this was my doing. I had mentioned something in regards to welfare being an incentive to the rich. And I don't remember where I posted that. However, somebody came back at me and was like, they did not understand. And they were a little confrontational. They wanted an explanation. And I provided it. But they went, hey, you know what? That's really, really interesting. You should talk about it on the podcast. Here we go. So a lot of people think, well, how could welfare be something that the rich get? When welfare, the general idea of welfare is that this is something that you're going to give to somebody who's really, really poor. So welfare might be... medical treatments, or it could be food stamps or anything like that. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about welfare, housing, things of that nature. So if I am a business owner, a lot of times people look at these business owners and they say, you know what, isn't it wrong that this business owner pays this person so little that they need welfare to live? And that's not how I look at it at all. That's not how I think of the situation. Here's what those people are being paid. They're being paid what the going rate is for that job. Now, if people were not provided with those services, if they were not provided with housing and food stamps and medicine and all that stuff, suddenly they can't live anymore. And therefore, the price of doing that labor goes up. They have to be paid more in order to survive. And if they're not paid more, they won't be able to survive, so they'll have to find a different job, which means that employer goes out of business. The only way that employer can pay them so little is because the rest of their living expenses are being paid for by welfare. In other words, their living expenses are being paid for by the people. And who's making the money off of that? What ends up happening is the business owner is now being paid, or is paying their employees by the taxpayers. So the rich are getting richer based off of the fact that we are paying for the poor with our tax money. That's how the rich can take advantage of welfare. So every time you see one of these large companies lobbying for more and more and more welfare, understand that all that means is they get to pay their employees less and less and less. And you're subsidizing those people's employment. You're making it so they can work for almost nothing, which is fine. To be honest, these people are accepting that job freely. So that's totally okay. But what you're taking away from those people by giving them welfare is you're limiting their options. Now they have a set amount of money that can only be put toward housing or only be put toward food or only be put toward daycare or whatever the welfare is. As opposed to if the employer had to pay them in money, suddenly that person has more choices. They have more freedom. They have more liberty. And that employer has the responsibility of not pushing it off to the taxpayer to pay for all of the living expenses of their employees. Anyways, in short, that's the answer on why welfare helps the super rich. It does not help the super poor. The super poor are still going to work. That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're really saying it has the subsidy effect, right?
Yep, you're subsidizing the rich.
Yeah, and it makes sense. Like, take daycare, for example, right? If you subsidize a large enough group of people for welfare, it drives up, but they could only use it, say, on childcare.
Yep.
That would drive up the price in the long term of childcare. And that's what we see happen with healthcare, right? Medicare and Medicaid have been a large reason why healthcare costs have risen, because we're subsidizing the cost as taxpayers, the limitless amount of money, of course, because we just borrow whatever we don't have. So we have an unlimited amount of money, an unlimited credit card, the United States national government does. And
before we go too far on that, keep in mind that that's not unlimited. We are putting that off onto our children. That's where that's actually coming from, or we're losing it in inflation. So keep going. Sorry.
I know you were joking, but I wanted to
explain it.
Even if you have an unlimited credit card, you have to pay it back someday.
Yep.
But you know, the idea is that you can charge as much as you want. And right now we're charging large amounts of money onto this credit card for healthcare costs that are associated with people who are poor and people who are older. And again, I'm not arguing that that's not, you know, we don't need to care about those people. I'm merely looking at the economics of it. What that does is it's such a, because the United States government is a dominant firm in the healthcare market, because they're such a large customer. They have this effect where they basically, they control almost the pricing that happens. A lot of people decide, because, and then they're required by law to take Medicare and Medicaid, and they have to, their prices are all negotiated and this sort of thing. So the market has disappeared and been replaced in the healthcare industry, and been replaced with a taxpayer dollars that can charge thousands of dollars per refill of prescription medicine. And then, you know, you have this whole cycle of doctors over prescribing because they get flown out on fancy planes for pharmacy. You know what I mean? So you see these super rich companies benefiting in the healthcare industry from something as simple as a subsidized healthcare for 20% of the country. Just that little amount of subsidy causes there to be huge disruptions in the free market that would have otherwise driven down price. And then you look at why healthcare is so expensive. Well, because the United States government pays for a lot of people's healthcare. That's one of the main reasons. And again, I'm not arguing that those people don't need healthcare. I'm merely arguing that they could afford it on their own if we weren't saying, well, it's going to be $600 for this MRI.
Yeah, it's strange that you'd think that by redistributing wealth, you'd think that what's going to end up happening is people are going to even out. But what actually happens is you increase the wealth gap, because these people now have to be paid less. Well, they don't have to be paid less, but the employer does not have to pay them as much because they're being subsidized.
And we know the middle class pays higher burden of taxes. So that means that they're getting less rich, they're having less property, they're passing on less wealth to their children. And so as time goes on in America, the people who are rich now, their families and inheritors will continue to get even super richer compared to the people who are middle class now, and they're going to continue to get richer and wealthier compared to the people who are poor now. And so you have this huge generational effect also. That's one of the reasons why, even though the free market has done a lot to increase the overall wealth of everybody in the country, in the world, you still see this huge wealth gap. And this growth of the wealth gap could probably, a lot of it, be traced back to government interference in the free market.
And it doesn't even need to be a subsidy. It doesn't even need to be involving tax. All you need to do is impose a regulation. So, for example, if I say that an employer has to pay for healthcare, all I'm saying is suddenly that employer cannot pay that person cash. Now, part of their payment is now forced to be around healthcare. And all that means is you're paying that employee less, or giving that employee less freedom. You don't even have to, it doesn't even have to be a subsidy. It can simply be a restriction or a regulation. You know, there's, okay, I'm going to change to sports, but I'll bring it back around.
In sports ball?
Sports ball. So you can stop me if I've said this before, because I use this all the time because I don't know a word for it. So somebody needs to write in and give me the word for this. So in football, they keep putting more and more pads on people because these guys are getting concussions all the time. And so they make a better helmet, they make better shoulder pads or whatever. And what ends up happening is people can then hit them harder because they've got better pads on, which leads to more concussions. And if you compare that with like rugby, it doesn't happen. They're not wearing pads, so they don't hit very hard. If you go into boxing, and the bigger the mitt you can put on, the bigger the glove, the less impact you have on your hands. So if you have no gloves, people go, "Oh my God, bare knuckle boxing." Well, they'll break their hand if they hit very hard. So they don't hit very hard. It's a lot safer, strangely enough. So I'm looking for a word of this strategy that is going to fulfill the end goal, and it does exactly the opposite in effect, because that is what welfare seems to do. If you're trying to fix the inequality of money across the board, welfare actually does the exact opposite of what you'd think it would do, just as football pads seem to increase the quantity of concussions people get.
Wow, that's a great point, and I like the analogy there. Someone should write us in at podcast@lpnevada.org.
Yep. Or you can hit me, Tyus, T-Y-A-S, at lpnevada.org. Either way, I want that word.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I don't know what it is. Okay, we're going to cover one more topic. This one's a very, very local topic, and that is the MGM properties here in Las Vegas. They started charging for parking a while ago, and we'll go into whether they should or shouldn't in a second. For about a year, they didn't charge locals for that parking, and then they started to. About 2 or 3 days ago, I got word that the other big player in town, which is Harrah's, or is it Caesars or Harrah's? Same company. They're going to be following suit. They're going to be doing the exact same thing. Up until now, it has been free for locals, and they're now going to start charging locals for parking. A lot of locals are really, really, really pissed about this. Now, I am going to tell you at the end of this how to get around it, because there is a completely voluntary way of getting around this problem. But I'm curious. I want to know your opinion on, should these companies be charging for parking, or is that a problem, or is that what are your thoughts?
Well, if they want to, I think they should. But the thing is that that's going to incentivize me to always Uber or Lyft, because it's $5 for my house and $20 to park. So I'm always incentivized to Uber or Lyft if I go to the Strip. But more than that, I would rather drive, because I normally don't drink too much when I go out and want to just gamble a little bit. So I'm incentivized as a local to go running and screaming to the station casinos, who have basically pledged that they would never charge for parking because they're for locals. And so what they've really said is they don't want locals on the Strip. And if they go out of business and they start complaining, oh well, right? You had your opportunity. If they want, they were so desperate to charge Californians $20 a day for parking that they just got greedy and decided that they could do it to locals also. What's really despicable is that they do this to people who are employees that run out of room in their lots. If the employee lot is full, then guess where you're parking and getting to work on time, so you better make enough money.
For me, I view this and I say, well, this comes down to freedom, and I don't really have an issue with it, provided you don't bring the government in and say, well, no, you have to provide free parking to these people. And I think
it's not the monopoly board.
Yeah, there are people that are saying that's what should happen, that people should be, that the company should be forced to provide free parking, even though it's their property.
That would be silly.
It's crazy.
Oh, that's so silly.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because, you know, again, it costs a lot of money to build those parking structures, to have attendants, to have security cameras, all the things that people expect when you go to a parking structure. So I understand charging. I just wish it wasn't $20. I think that, to me, as a consumer, that's too high. And so if it was $5, I might drive instead of Ubering, but because it's $20, I will never drive to the Strip. Never.
So here's the workaround. Oh, by the way, one more nice benefit is, since they're charging for it, and they're probably charging too much, once you know this workaround, you'll always be able to park, and you're going to find spots easily, because not very many people are going to be parking at these casinos. So by raising these, by putting in these parking charges, you reduce how many people are going to be parking there, which is going to mean we're going to have a lot of available parking. Here's the workaround. Both of these companies have rewards cards, these cards that you can get for playing their games, their slot machines. So one's called an M Life card. That's for MGM. The other is the Total Rewards card, and that is Caesars Harrah's properties. So those cards don't get you free parking, but those cards are free to sign up for. And if you were to gamble enough, you do get free parking. But if you gamble enough, you're going to lose a lot of money. It'll raise the tier. So they call them like a diamond or a platinum member or whatever. It raises the tier, and then suddenly you get other benefits like half-price show tickets or things like that. But one of those benefits is free parking. The workaround is if you sign up for the credit card, which has no minimums, it has no annual fees, nothing like that, it automatically moves that card into being upgraded status, which means you get free parking at all properties on the Las Vegas Strip. Now, you'd have to do that both one for MGM, which I did maybe a year ago, and now I just did this for Caesars and Harrah's, which I believe that's going to be going into effect shortly. So anyways, if you want the workaround and you got the credit score to apply for some cards, go get it done.
Oh, that's a great one. I had no idea you could do that.
Yeah. So it's an easy little thing. Hey, if you haven't come to one of our socials or our mixers, please come out and do that. We would love to see you there. And if you don't know where those are at, head to our website, which is lpnevada.org. When you're there, you can see, well, you can check out all the other podcasts. You can see what we're doing. You can see what the party is all about. And you can see how you can get involved either by donating your time or by donating some of your hard-earned jingle. By that, I mean some money. We would really appreciate that. Other ways you can help us out is you could give this podcast a positive review in iTunes. 5-star reviews really do help us as far as spreading the word. We do put this podcast up on YouTube. It's not our primary place that people are doing this, but if you want to see my bald face, you can head right there and check it out. And what did I have lastly? I guess until next time, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.